like yuri manga about like adult women, like basically like women who are like older than the age of like 22 or 23. There are just so many, but they all get talked about again because I think because of the reasons that I discussed earlier this hour. And so I'm gonna try to keep it as brief as I can, but know that this list is a lot longer than originally I had anticipated, and that this list also includes a manga that I recently caught up with the most of the latest chapters with, that I have a lot of thoughts about, and also has, this list also has my favorite manga basically of all time in it. So hold on to your chairs and strap in. All right, we're gonna start off with our shout out corner, and remember, full spoilers ahead. The first shout out I'm gonna give is for a series called Run Away With Me Girl by Batan. This is a story about two women who reconnect in their adulthood. They briefly dated each other in high school and were very happy, and then during high school graduation, one of them is like, okay, we have to break up now because it's time for us to find real husbands. And it's about the two of them escaping, or helping one of them escape an abusive relationship. So depictions of intimate partner violence and also homophobia are in the story, but very gorgeous artwork. Check that out. The other shout out that I want to give is called Hana Monogatari by Schwinn. That's S-C-H-W-I-N-N. This is a story actually about two women who are in their 60s. One of them was recently widowed, and she begins to rediscover this part of herself that, like, I don't know, she wants to live thanks to the encouragement of another woman who is older and who works at a local cosmetics store. Old Women Yuri, essentially. This story was discontinued due to poor promotion by the editors, but the author, Schwinn, themselves have encouraged people essentially to keep talking about the story so that more people can get into basically like frank and open depictions about older women desiring love and sexuality and stuff like that, which is really great. They've also basically, on that same note, have encouraged people to like bootleg their comic as long as it helps people like read more about older women and their romances and dalliances. So check it out, seriously, Hana Monogatari by Schwinn. All right, we're getting into the recommendations now, and we'll first start off with a story that actually I think doesn't need recommending at all because it is very popular right now in North America. But I decided to talk about this because it originally was in the shout out portion, and then last week I got my hands on volumes 2 to 5 of this story, which were all the volumes that I hadn't read yet, and I had so many thoughts about it that I felt like it just didn't make sense to not give the story a proper review and spotlight. So this one is called She Loves to Cook, She Loves to Eat, and it's by Sakaomi Yuzaki. It is about an office worker named Nomoto whose hobby essentially is to cook, and she cooks big, delicious meals that helps her relax. But she has a small appetite and no one to eat her meals with. One day she runs into her neighbor, Kasuga, who happens to be a big eater. And on a whim, Nomoto actually invites Kasuga over for dinner. And the two begin to discover the beginnings of a relationship that sprout from a mutual love of food and deep respect for one another. So a few things about the story. The romance is really interesting because it doesn't really appear until volume 3. And then once volume 3 happens, it happens all at once. It's very, very slow and then super quick. I think part of the reason for this is because the main character, Nomoto, doesn't realize or I guess has trouble reconciling with her lack of attraction to men until like her adulthood. And so when she falls in love with Kasuga, she doesn't even really realize it. But the other reason why is because Nomoto actually is asexual. And so one, the story has really interesting, and I don't know if it's, if I'm not, I mean, I can't say whether or not it's like very good or not, but I can say it's a very rare depiction of asexuality and asexual lesbians in Yuri manga, and I think in manga in general. The romance depicted in the story, I think at times, therefore, can feel a little bit unconventional because it's not like this, like, oh, whirling, dreamy, passionate romance or anything. It is slow and it happens in a way that I think is like quite subtle. When it happens, though, it can feel really cute and sweet. Kasuga is quite taciturn, and so she doesn't have very big, showy expressions. But Nomoto is like the complete opposite. She's sort of like a puppy. And so when she is feeling her feelings for Kasuga, it's actually, it can be very cute and it can be, it can look very sweet. One of the reasons why I think this story. Okay, I'll be really frank. One of the reasons why I think the story is interesting and why I have a lot of thoughts about it is because I think that if I were to explain this story using the framework that I've used before in previous episodes of this particular series, where I talked about how Yuri manga is it exists on a spectrum between provocative and titillating and being 2S LGBTQ literature, most Yuri manga falls somewhere in the middle. This story, I think, is right where it is 2S LGBTQ literature. She loves to cook, she loves to eat, is really, I think, a story that happens to be about a lesbian romance that also talks extensively about social issues, particularly feminist issues. And I think that is extremely rare in manga. But you see it even in the very first chapter, right? When we're introduced to Nomoto and we learn about her love of cooking, we also learn that Nomoto really dislikes sharing this hobby with certain people because she's afraid that people will assume that she cooks well for specifically a male partner. In the story, she often laments that people can't just acknowledge that she wants to cook for herself and that she s simply has this hobby. As we progress throughout the story, we see more issues around gender are revealed, and most of the characters, I think, most of the characters that we focus on, has some kind of explicit gripe with cis heteropatriarchy, which is totally, totally warranted. But that also means essentially that this theme around feminism is thoroughly explored throughout the series. In a lot of ways, I am actually a little bit surprised at the popularity of the series. It received 2 seasons of a live drama adaptation. I have not watched them, so I don't know how they have adapted the story. But you know, if a manga is popular enough to get a drama adaptation, I think that speaks volumes. And you know, it's obviously super popular here in North America. Though the story may not declare it, and though Sakomi Yuzaki, the author, may not say it, I think that she loves to cook, she loves to eat, can explicitly be understood to be a feminist manga. And throughout my years of reading manga, and again, I'm no scholar, I'm not an academic, I'm not a cultural critic, it's not as though there aren't manga that are political and that discuss sociopolitics, but it is quite rare, I think, to see a manga that is mainstream that explicitly discusses feminist issues, and to the thorough extent that it does. While I give the story a lot of praise, and I'll wrap it up with a really important piece as well, I think if I were to give an honest review, personally, I'm not a huge fan of the art style. I think that it can appear quite inconsistent at times, and sometimes it can be visually quite uninteresting to look at. The other thing that I don't always appreciate is how some discussion of the social justice pieces seems a little bit too tacked on. Now, I'm not sure if this is because of the position that I am in, because I am interested in social justice issues, and so I don't always feel like I need to read a story that explicitly always talks about it in such a blatant and maybe, I'll say, an interesting way. Maybe it's that the audience that Sakaomi Yuzaki thinks that they're writing for really needs like an explicit explanation of sensitive topics such as mental health or such as familial neglect. I just don't like how tacked on these explanations and explorations are in this series. It gives it almost like a heart stopper like quality. And by that, I mean, like, this is written, it feels like sometimes it's written for like a young teen audience that like really has not been presented with these ideas before. So it can almost feel like every couple of chapters is like a very special episode of like an 80s sitcom where you have to take away a lesson of the day. I've got to be honest, I like rarely feel this way, because I can appreciate sometimes when an author is trying to get a point across and they really do the most to get it across. But this feels like such a good example of an author not trusting their audience. And again, maybe it's just based on the position that I am in, because I am engaged with a lot of social justice ideas and topics, but oh my god, it can feel really weird actually reading the story sometimes. But again, you know, let me finish this review up with some praise, right? I think it's amazing that the author goes into these sensitive topics, and they also have the heart to give a content warning before they dive into stuff that can be quite triggering. I appreciate that quite a bit. I don't know that I've read any other manga that's done that before. And you know, one of the things that I really do deeply appreciate about She Loves to Cook, She Loves to Eat is that it feels like an extension of what Yoshiya Nobuko and other class S genre writers were trying to do with their stories when they're discussing these intimate relationships between women that double or are meant to explore feminist ideas. This manga feels like it's an extension of that legacy of that literary genre, where it's not just about this like dreamy, beautiful, like idealized relationship, but it has this like social heaviness to it, the social depth to it. And I really appreciate that. So that's She Loves to Cook, She Loves to Eat by Sakaomi Yuzaki. And everybody will tell you about it, I'm sure. So you better get on to reading it. All right. The next series that I'm going to recommend is one that you cannot find easily in North America, so you have to get creative with it. It's called Collectors by Nishi Uko. And this is a slice of life 4-panel comic strip about Takako, who is a fashionista, and Shinobu, who is a grad student, and how they bicker and quarrel and make out over each other's interests, which are clothes, books, and each other. There's really honestly maybe nothing all that remarkable about the story, if I'm going to be very honest. I began reading it, I think, in my late teens or early 20s, because I just wanted to read something that wasn't just about, like, teenagers falling in love. And I also really appreciated the no-frillsness of the story. It's a very, straightforward, episodic manga. It wasn't until I reread it in my mid-20s and then finished reading it a few weeks ago that I realized why it's so good. Takako and Shinobu really seem like total opposites of each other, and their constant bickering kind of makes them seem impossible to last. Yet their shared stubbornness and intense mutual attraction to each other is actually kind of refreshing in this genre. There's this like deep sense of like passion in this story and in this romance that I feel like goes beyond a lot of the stories that I've talked about in this series. The story meanders in its long run because it was actually serialized in a magazine that was only published 3 times a year. But when you get towards the end, where the conflict has gotten to its peak, the payoff actually feels really satisfying, and I think actually in some ways feels kind of romantic. You know, it's about two people who've like gone to this like breaking point in their relationship, and one of them has to make a sacrifice, and they have to prove how much they really want the other person in their life. It's kind of exciting in that way, honestly. Remarkably, revisiting and finishing the series at the age that I am now, it was a little bit of a trip, honestly, because I started reading the series, I think in my like late teens, and I've been following it for years, and it's just really wild to be reminded that the characters are actually now younger than me. Shinobu and Takako are 24, and I am, in the many years that I've followed it, I'm quite a bit older now, and so that was kind of a trip. If you are looking for a story that's like really simple and straightforward, episodic, but is about two people who are like just so into each other, oh my god, it's like annoying and mind-blowing that they like each other so much, that's Collectors by Nishi Uko. And again, you might have to sail the seven seas for that story because it's not being distributed in North America. With that all being said, now is the time for me to talk about my favorite yuri manga of all time, possibly a contender for my favorite manga of all time, and it is called Even Though We're Adults by Takako Shimura. The story is about Ayano and Akari, who meet each other one night when Ayano goes to Akari's restaurant, and Akari is her server. The two chat it up, and then they flirt, and then they make out, and they exchange contact information. Akari can't stop thinking about Ayano, and one day as she is serving a new patron, who is a man who tells her that he and his wife have been really looking forward to trying out this new restaurant, she looks over to greet the man's wife, and it is Ayano. As it turns out, Ayano and Akari have started an affair. And that's not the reason why I like it, okay? I don't like it just for the drama. Let's be very real here. Even though it sounds really horrible that this romance begins with one of them cheating on her husband, the reason why I like Even Though We're Adults so much is that it's actually really a story about desire, identity, and finding happiness. Trying to figure out if what you truly desire, what really makes you happy, is something that you have denied yourself from pursuing, or if it really, or if living a good life really means that you should follow the rules and expectations that society has for you. You know, a lot of the stories that we have discussed in this episode, actually all, I think most if not all of the stories, they have some discussion, an element in there about compulsory heterosexuality. It's this idea, and also kind of a shared experience that a lot of queer women have, that they feel that in order to live good lives, they need to be in relationships with men, and they need to play out a kind of like cisgender heterosexual idealized performance of being in a relationship with a man, you know, raising a nuclear family and conforming to certain gender stereotypes about heterosexual women. And a lot of these manga that I've talked about today also explores ideas about expectations that a cis-heteropatriarchal society has. You know, what is the expectation of a woman in her adulthood? How should a woman's adulthood look like? Is a relationship that is deemed good by social expectations more desirable than a relationship that makes you happy, built on a foundation of mutual respect? Takako Shimura's work is mostly character driven, and one of the things that I really appreciate about the way that she tells these stories is that she has a very non-judgmental approach to unraveling the inner worlds and the relationships that her characters have with each other. She does that in two of the work that are probably most popular in North America, called Wandering Sun. That one's about transgender children. And then she also does it in Sweet Blue Flowers, which is about a high school student who reconnects with her childhood best friend, who is a lesbian. And just the incredible amount of maturity and sensitivity that she has in telling these stories is really, really remarkable. A lot of other writers are going to try to hold you to the edge of your seat by creating drama with the complicatedness of that story and the mess that it creates, but I think that Takako Shimura does a really good job of holding you to the edge of your seat beyond just the drama. She's forcing you to find some kind of relatability and empathy with that character, despite how flawed they are and despite how much you might dislike them. I think one of the things that I enjoy about this story is that this is actually quite difficult to get through sometimes. Because these characters are so well written, they are motivated by a myriad of different things. They are held back by a myriad of different things as well. And the story just feels really, really, really human and really, really mature. And on like the Yuri part of things, on like the romance part of things, I think one of the reasons why the romantic parts in the story are so satisfying is partly because, one, there's like already a lot of like tension and drama that builds up to those moments of like a really, I don't know, heartfelt love confession, and the way that these two people are so into each other. But I think it's also just because of how well Takako Shimura is able to get you to empathize with the characters that it makes you feel as though, like, when there is a love confession between Ayano and Akari, it kind of feels like you are the person who's making that love confession, or it kind of feels like you're the one who's receiving that confession as well. And I don't know, maybe that's kind of like a strange way to frame how good the romance, or how satisfying the romance is, in Even Though We're Adults. But I think because she's just so good at showing you the feelings that each character is experiencing, including Ayano and Akari, that she's, when she has these like romantic beats, even though they might be subtle, or sometimes they feel very like grand, it's really like, oh my god, it melts your heart. It like, I mean, it sends me to the moon. It makes me so happy. I really want these two people to be able to have a happy ending, essentially. And not that I want anybody, not that I want to end up getting into an affair with anybody to have my own happy relationship, but it does make me feel like the story, despite all of its messiness and tension, does feel really romantic. So I don't know. It is so good. It is just, the story is just so well written, and just that like confession of love when you know Ayano has been so shy and hesitant and feeling so ashamed of all of this, she finally says that, like, I have to take like some kind of action here. Ugh, amazing, amazing. I could talk all day about this manga, I truly can. And beyond just the story, like, the visuals are amazing. Takako Shimura is such an amazing artist, but obviously, if you are not a fan of stories about affairs, don't read the story. There's actually more than one affair. There's so many affairs in the story that are discussed. But it's a really good one. And, you know, if you do end up checking out any, honestly, any recommendation that I have shared throughout the past couple of weeks, read Even Though We're Adults. Don't do it if you're super young. You won't understand it, no offense, but consider it if you are an older person like I am. I'm gonna close off today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you for tuning in. If you do end up picking up any of these series, especially Even Though We're Adults, please feel free to write in. I am at Typically Tuesdays on Instagram, or typicallytuesdays@gmail.com through email. One final track for you, just a little bit to close off the show. This is, wow, very appropriate. This is I Think I Like Your Girlfriend by Nia Naderata. And I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM. And thank you for tuning in. I'll talk to you very soon. She took my spot in the bed, the space in your head that I used to. Something about her changes my mood, the sweetest perfume, she's too good for you. I think
You're listening